When my landlord said rent could be cheaper if we were friends with benefits, you know, I'd heard of sexual harassment in the workplace, but at home?
That is housing discrimination based on sex.
I'm legally blind. A landlord recently said that he didn't think I'd be able to take care of an apartment on my own and refused to rent to me.
That is also housing discrimination.
A real estate agent said that we'd be more comfortable living in a different neighborhood with people like us. Luckily, we know our rights. It's illegal to steer prospective homeowners away from or to certain neighborhoods based on race or national origin.
If you think you've been discriminated or have questions about your rights, contact the Fair Housing Foundation at 800-446-FAIR or also online at fhfca.org. Fair housing is your right. This is a public service message by the Fair Housing Foundation and supported by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Under FHIP grant PEI, FPEI 220099.
May the first
be with you.
May the first be with you. Oh, okay.
Guess who's back?
Guess who's back?
The Phantom, triumphant return.
The triumphant and expensive return of Phantom the Cat. He's here. He has chosen just this moment. Well, he loves Star Wars.
Yeah, he loves Star Wars. He loves fanfare.
Yeah. That's why his name is Phantom. It's not PH, it's Fan.
Phantom.
It's Fandom. You've been hearing it wrong. Toxic Fandom is his full name. Phantom is back from his various medical emergencies.
He's like a real kid.
He really is.
Yeah.
Except I don't get tax credits. I get cat credits
and they don't really amount to much. It's mostly just half dead birds in front of my door.
Cat credits is what I scoop out of his litter box and they do taste.
I can't say no to them. Yeah. I'll say that. I won't say they're good. I can't say I won't stop eating them.
There's something about them. I mean, it's kind
like
of
a Boston baked bean. There's like just something about them.
Once you pop, he's eating right now.
Yeah,
that's
the rest of the rhyme.
Once you pop, the cat runs away and then we can stock top.
And he's probably eating something in the corner of the room. Yeah.
So this is L.A. Meekly, a Los Angeles history podcast.
No actual information ever given.
Anything we say cannot be held against us in court. This is Daniel Zaffrin, the unsuable Daniel Zaffrin.
This is the incredibly litigious Greg Gonzalez.
Which one?
Did I tell you that somebody added me on back in the Twitter days?
The Tudor style.
Another Greg Gonzalez added me and every other Greg Gonzalez on Twitter. He's like, I think we should just get to know each other. And I said, do you want to add the guy from Cigarettes After Sex? And then the group died after that. The three messages deep and all the Greg Gonzalez's were
cowards.
Like, yeah, cowards.
I thought that there was because we're talking about the Greg Gonzalez singer from Cigarettes After Sex, who people constantly think is you online. I thought you told me that there was like a support group of people named Greg Gonzalez who were like, I got this message.
No.
You were forming one.
I was trying to, I was,
you were the Norma Ray of the
I
Greg
was brought
Gonzalez.
In and I was the brave hero who's like, you know, we can kill this guy. We could take his
face. Again, anything we say on this show cannot be used against us in court.
Yeah. He's actively doing something.
Yeah, he's eating.
Oh, okay.
Foam.
He eats all the way up there?
He eats. You know what? He's eating at a fifth grade level, meaning he eats glue and foam.
Yeah, he eats glue and but he swallowed a quarter once.
So before we get into May, let's talk about something we did in April.
That's how months work. They're sequential, right? They're always in the same order. We don't know. Climate change.
Come November, and who knows what month's going to be what month.
We're doing Halloween again.
Hey, if that was somebody's platform, I don't care what they said about the border. I will vote for them.
I will vote for them. Send me to Halloween Town, the magical place in Nightmare Before Christmas.
The trademarked land from the Disney Corporation. So what did you do in April?
In April, I did
2024.
So many
actually, you know what? 2017. What did you do in April 2017?
April 2017 was a very good year, a very good month and a very good year. I went to Point Dume, D-U-M-E.
Right.
Which is in the Santa Monica Mountains. I took that wonderful Canaan Road that goes over through the canyons and mountains. It's the one that shoots out the tunnels that are in the mountain. It's pretty cool.
Because I know that Topanga Canyon is like closed till fall.
Yeah.
So did you do that?
Yeah, I did that. Yeah, I walked it. They legally, they can't stop you if you want to walk. Yeah, I went to Point Doom and I saw the big rock from Planet of the Apes. But it's also...
It's not really a... I mean, you're talking about the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, you're right.
She's a beautiful green lady.
That old rock. That's the new...
that old rock and chain.
The new...
That old rock and grill.
The new misogynistic term just dropped. That old rock...
But it's not a, it's just like the, it's just a, it's a cliff.
It's not, a cliff. I know it's not a rock. It just looks like a big rock from where I'm standing, but it's a cliff.
Or what is the earth if not if a that big old rock and
that
chain.
Old stinky rock.
Then the chain is the sun.
The rock's not doing good. Have you checked the rock lately?
Hey, don't knock the rock. Okay.
Don't knock the rock. Okay.
Love it or leave
it. It's Alcatraz. Don't knock it. You can escape it, but don't knock it.
Forget it, Greg. It's Alcatraz.
It's Alcatraz. Yeah. It's one of the best viewpoints in the city. It's beautiful. There's like a beautiful staircase that leads to a tide pool and these firefighters were walking up and down and two of them were okay. And the third one had his shirt off. He's like, call 911. Wait, that's not my number. He was not doing good, but it's absolutely stunning. And I went with Ed this week.
From Ed TV?
From Ed TV, yeah. I went with my friend Ed TV, Matthew McConaughey. You're an idiot. I went with Ed, and we had gone to Hawaii, I want to say like 2008, 2009, we had gone to Hawaii with our...
When Obama got elected, you said, I'm leaving the country, and then you realized Hawaii's still
part of the country. And what I mostly meant was I would need a body of water between me and him and me. Because I didn't want to hug him so much.
I need to go to his homeland.
Anyways, all that to say, when we were standing on like, you know, the viewpoint of Mount Doom, we're like, this looks like Hawaii. Like we might as well, like it's as stunning as Hawaii is. And it's, you know, an hour away from home.
But the pineapples aren't as good.
They're not as good. And you have to buy them. They don't just grow up.
They just fall off of a tree on your head. And then you get amnesia.
The lays they put around their neck, it feels like a shackle. And they put me in a van and they say, 2 million or we shove you at the bottom of the ocean.
Welcome to Hawaii.
Yeah, welcome to Hawaii, friend.
Aloha. Yeah, it is nice there. I haven't walked down those steps.
Oh,
because
no?
That topless firefighter was me. I know it's hard.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. Yeah.
When my shirt comes off, it's really a Superman and Clark Kent sort of thing. Like I look like me.
Yeah.
But then when my shirt comes off,
you look like a 50-year-old man struggling to keep up with the fire department.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I look like a volunteer firefighter. But yeah, I've never walked down there, but it, I mean, hey, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, you got to see it. They should show it at Point Doom.
They should against the cliff wall.
Yeah. And it's everything is like warped and distorted and you can't hear anything because the waves are crashing.
Yeah.
You monsters, you ruined the sound quality.
Yeah, you maniacs, you sound quality did it up.
We were the apes all along. Well, you want to hear about me?
Yes, please.
Okay, let's hear about me now.
Let's hear where you ate this month.
Hey, this one isn't it? I'm not Phantom. I didn't eat this because this is a book this time.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, Phantom did.
It's a book about food.
It's a book. Phantom had a few nibbles.
Yeah.
But he'll talk about it later.
He'll throw it up a little later.
I had live on air. I had this book sent to me.
Oh.
And it is called L.A. Scavenger, The Ultimate Search for Los Angeles's Hidden Treasures. It's by Danny Jensen, who I think you know. He's the guy who wrote 100 Things to Do in Los Angeles Before You Die. And he wrote Secret Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So they sent me this book.
Oh, cool.
And he's also written for KCET. But the book basically, it takes you on scavenger hunts.
Oh, neat.
Around Los Angeles. So it has 22 different neighborhoods that it'll take you to and then give you like a brief history. And then it's basically like riddles, riddles and pictures of things that you need to try to spot in this neighborhood.
Wow.
Like walk around for a while and spot these things and see if you can find them. And then it gives you like a little history of each of the location that you find.
Every time you give an example, move your hand, he looks up like you're moving something.
This is, as I talk, I'm hypnotizing Phantom and he's going to kill Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Again, nothing that we say can be used against us in court, but my cat is going to attack a Kennedy.
And he's going to do it thinking he's a chicken.
So there's over 300 locations in the thing, like spread amongst those 22 different neighborhoods. So this book is a lot of fun. It encourages you to like explore and take in different neighborhoods around the city, which is something we both love doing.
Yeah.
So this is like an excuse to be like, let's go look at every single thing in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
An example of what they have in Highland Park, one of the clues is, let's see if you get this one.
Okay.
This fine feathered friend stands proud on the roof, bucket in hand, Blue Jean Boy is no goof. He's LA's own Statue of Liberty. This fowl proves we can be fun and free. It's, of course, me, obviously.
I'm Chicken Boy.
I'm the Chicken Boy. when I take my shirt off when I'm at Point Doom. Is that Chicken Boy or are you happy to see me? So it's a fun way / excuse, like I said, to go to new neighborhoods that you might not have been to in a while or have never been to. So the book, again, it's LA Scavenger, The Ultimate Search for Los Angeles Hidden Treasures by Danny Jensen. It's out now and it's fun, especially if you have kids. This is like the perfect thing to go around and not have to pay to take them to Discovery Zone, which are still around, which are very much still a reference.
I'm completely up to date with culture.
Yeah. And then they want to go, afterwards, they're probably going to want to go play the Ninja Turtles side scrolling video game.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to want to do.
As pixelated as possible, they're going to want to go to 4-H Club.
What's 4-H Club?
I don't even remember. It's a reference in old TV.
Isn't that like
it's like a Boy Scout adjacent sort of thing.
Yeah, boys who don't have parents? I don't know.
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's like an honor club or something.
Wait, what's Studio 8A? What's that? They like kids like that?
We're the Four Horsemen of Apocalypse.
Do kids like that still? Kids still like the Bible, right? So now we're getting into the merry, merry month of May. So what is this episode, Greg?
We were strolling through the park one day.
In the merry, merry month of April.
Yeah.
And we got a message from Carl Tart, actually. He was, because I was thinking like, what should I pitch to Greg?
The boss.
Every month I head into your office. I sit on, you're behind your mahogany table. I sit on your casting couch.
I'm knocking back my fourth whiskey of the moment.
Yeah. Of the minute.
Yeah. Of the minute.
And I say,
sit on this.
Gee, boss, what do you think about something about, I don't know, chocolate bars? But I was struggling to come up with like, well, what's something good? And then out of the blue, a little angel from heaven came in the form of Carl Tart messaging both of us like, what's the deal with cars? Well, he actually wanted to know about
Pixar's cars.
About Pixar's cars. You wanted to know, so where was Lightning McQueen built? And we kept trying to explain to him, Carl, these are Pixar.
When they cry, is it like steering fluid?
When they eat, is it like a liquid diet only, or are like air fresheners mints for them?
Yeah, if they pop a tire, is it like breaking a hand?
If they run out of gas, is that like anemia? So he asked about why car washes look all googie like. And then I thought, well, let's just do a whole car thing. Why not? We haven't done that before. So we're talking cars.
Oh, no. I did my whole thing about washes.
Oh no. I did mine on trains again.
And it's different research somehow.
So I'm going to start with like early car stuff and then car companies coming to Los Angeles. And you're going to get into the cool car stuff.
Yeah. Low riders, custom cars, a little bit. Kind of a broad general discussion.
So I'm going to get us started in our talk about cars. So here we go.
Okay.
Here in my car, I feel safest of all. I can lock all my doors. Oh no, here comes the car's owner. I'm speeding away. Here come the cops. They won't take me alive in cars. Kids like Gary Newman references,
right? Yeah, they love Gary Newman references. They love a delightful spin on a song that they're going to turn this podcast off and go listen to that instead.
This is like TikTok. This is all just sponsored by music companies who want you to listen to hear the full song if you go to universalmusic.com.
This parody is so questionable. You will have to go back to the original, see if you even liked it in the first place.
If you even understand what he did there. So I'm going to be covering, like I said, the earliest days of cars in what is now Autopia, but real. And then also the good old car factory days in Los Angeles. So as we learned way back when, LA was a rail town. Yeah, welcome to Los Angeles where you're getting railed. Coming down to LA and get railed.
No thanks. I just wanted to cure my TV. No, get railed by the sun.
Get railed with fresh air. I'm talking trolleys. I'm talking trains, pedestrians, and horse corpses at every unprotected rail crossing. But a new alternative was brewing around the country. And boy, did it smell good.
What's that sound in the distance? Awooga!
Oh, no. I better stand here as this car slowly chugs toward me. What did I just say? What's a car? So the first automobile ever in Los Angeles was built by two men. Samuel D. Sturgis and J. Philip Erie. Yeah, this was, it's weird that they have pretty much tracked down when the first car was
strange.
Here.
Strange.
Patient zero. So nobody seems to know much about Sturgis, but Erie ran the Abbotsford Inn at 8th and Hope, which was a hotel owned by Abbott Kinney.
Oh, wow.
But for, he was also an electrical and mechanical engineer. Everyone in LA needs two jobs, am I right? Degrees back then.
You needed references from the president.
Degrees back then, there was like, it went from like 60 to 90. That's the only degrees they had because education didn't exist. So they started building this car in 1895 and it took 2 years and $30,000, which today is over $1 million to make a car.
A car.
Which is, what was it, used? And what they came up with was the Erie and Sturgis gasoline carriage.
Cool.
That promised to emancipate the horse from bondage. That's
I love that. That they were thinking of the horse instead of like, you can shoot the horse in the head and just take this car. Like, no, set him free.
Think of all the glue we'll have. My dog needs a lot of food, but all these horses are pulling my carriage. These horses are pulling my carriage.
These horses. Yo, are you pulling my carriage?
Nay. Is that a horse?
I don't know. Sure.
That's Nixon.
Yep.
So it looked like every other weird car back then, but it could seat 9 people.
Wow.
And it was more lightweight than the cars being built in the Midwest. So in theory, it could go up to 25 miles per hour.
And had faster than a speeding bullet.
Back then, yeah.
Back then, yeah. The bullets were heavier.
Bullets were just like whatever rocks you could shove into a blunderbuss. It had a gas tank that could take it, they claimed, all the way from LA to San Francisco.
Whoa.
With one fill up. And just to keep things safe, the gas tank was lined with asbestos. And they also used it as a thermos when they ran out of gas.
25 miles per hour from Los Angeles to San Francisco.
What is okay? So it's like 600 or no, 300?
I want to say it's maybe 300 to 400 miles away.
Okay. So the math is impossible. Wait, 25 miles per hour.
It's 0.20. No.
That's four. In 4 hours, you will go 100 miles. Yes. So 12 hours. That's not that bad.
No, it's not that bad. I mean, if you go up the coast, it takes me 7 to 8 hours. So it's not even like I'm just shaving
Are you taking
couple
the
hours
scenic
off.
Route?
I take red lights the whole way. Stop signs the whole way.
By the way, we're also thinking like, oh yeah, the five always existed.
No,
like,
you're right.
Had to go for like
Jesus.
They had to go through like Death Valley.
Yeah,
to get
they
there.
Asked for directions from the Donner Party.
You're gonna finish that asbestos. No. So in November 1896, they felt the car was ready for a. It was ready for a spine. I was thinking of the guy's last name is Erie, so it was. Ready to take this on a spine.
Jeez.
So they decided to give it a try and it didn't work.
Of course.
$1 million and it didn't work. But then came the big day, May 30th, 1897, 3 a.m. Their shop on 5th and Broadway, Sturgis, Erie, their wives, and a couple friends piled into this 9-seater jalopy and they rolled out onto Broadway, the first car to ever drive in Los Angeles. They did it and it hit traffic immediately. The second through 4,000 followed 4 milliseconds later and piled up behind.
It was the only car in town and still it was struggling to find parking. There's a spot, but the parallel parking's too tight.
Oh, there's so much horse manure. this horse corpse is in the red. So they did it this early so that they wouldn't scare any of the horses.
Okay.
So they needed to hold a candle to see since it was still dark outside. Which, by the way,
oh my God.
Erie? Ready for a spine?
Candle?
Want to go on a spine?
I love.
It's like Mr. Toad's car.
Yeah, it's like Mr. Toad's car, one, but also like the horses get priority over cars.
Well, that's the same thing with the Rose Parade of like, we can't do it on Sunday because the horses are going to church.
They get the most horny.
Sorry, Phantom.
He doesn't like that.
I made him horny.
He doesn't.
But this was the time when people would come from miles around just to ride an escalator.
True.
So a crowd did gather to watch this momentous occasion
of
an automobile on the streets of Los Angeles. This was also the first motor carriage ever built west of the Mississippi. So this is like,
wow, this is a big deal.
It all happened on Broadway.
Oh my God. Can you imagine like Nevada's like, they have a car in California?
What's that?
And then the year is 1985.
1985.
Yeah, because they didn't have, come on, keep up with the joke. Nevada's behind. Come on.
I don't get it.
What are you, Nevada? Wouldn't you know that in 1985?
Wait a minute. You're not making fun of Reno, are you?
Are you making fun of Back to the Future?
So everyone wanted to see this car that promised to go 25 miles per hour as it roared down Broadway at a blinding 6 miles per hour. They actually got it going to.
Who's pushing it?
Let's do the math on that.
Yeah.
It was going 6 miles per hour slower than a bike. And still people were like, I got to see this car. This is their path. They went south on Broadway. You can follow this on a map. Left on 6th.
Okay.
Right on Main. Stay on Main. Left on 7th and then headed over the river towards Hollenbeck Park where Erie lives.
You got to go down 8th. It's a 7th, a one way. What are you doing? You can't make a left on 7.
Every street back then was in every way. People were going up on all the streets. So they drove over bottles on purpose to test out the tires.
Oh, cool.
And made sure, you know, they popped.
Yeah.
And along the way, they had to stop multiple times to make repairs to the car. And once they finally got near his house, it completely broke down.
Oh my God. Like the kind of thing in the cartoons where the tires fall, like, yeah, they plop over. Yeah.
And the bottom falls out.
Yeah, the bottom falls out. The engine shoots, like, it pops a gasket and blows through the hood.
A tin can popped open and a spring flew out of his hat.
Yeah, the steering wheel shot out.
It rolled back to their shop. So the event was written about in the papers and more trips were planned, including they were going to go all the way to Redlands.
Oh my God.
But Erie and Sturgis wanted to make sure the car was in, quote, apple pie order, whatever that means.
That's cute.
And all the constant problems and tinkering put this whole endeavor deep into the red and they just gave up on it. So it didn't go anywhere else.
I would love if the papers were like, first car spotted in Los Angeles. Are we tempting the gods? Have we stole fire from the gods? And it's going 6 miles per hour and immediately breaks down. Nope, we've done it this time. Nope. We stole fire from the gods. We're Prometheus.
This is what happens when you vote blue. That's what the LA Times is saying.
We should go electric.
We should go hydrogen. Everyone should be in Zeppelins.
We should go helium.
The traffic situation is escalated in Los Angeles. We need Zeppelins now. 1896. That's the commonly agreed upon first car in Los Angeles.
Okay.
But there was something else that happened that same year that is a challenger to this title. So this was also in 1897, but we're not sure exactly when, but a 17-year-old named Earl C. Anthony, as part of a class project, built a single-person electric car.
Whoa.
That couldn't go very far, but it could go 10 miles per hour. So this little boy had these people beat. So while this may or may not have been the actual first car in LA, it was definitely the first electric car in 1897, and also the first car to get into an accident when he used those 10 miles per hour to hit a pothole and crash into a pole.
Oh my God. You hit both? Usually it's one or the other.
He hit one
and
launched him into the other.
Cute. What is it? He sounds like he's playing Mario Kart.
Well, he hit a puka.
Yeah. You gotta stay away from those banana peels, buddy. You're gonna spin out.
This is what happens when you drive behind Donkey Kong. So Anthony also went on to do many other notable things in LA. He started a car dealership with his dad in 1904 called the Western Motor Car Company at Wilshire and La Brea that facilitated a lot of the custom Packards made for the emerging Hollywood celebrities. Mm-hmm. He helped found the LA Motor Car Dealers Association in 1905, as well as helped arrange the first LA automobile show in 1907.
Wow.
It doesn't end there. He may have opened the first gas station in the city
at
Washington and Grand. He commissioned the first neon sign in the United States to put on the roof of his showroom.
Whoa.
So the first neon sign ever was for this guy's car dealership in the United States.
Yeah.
It's now on the front of the Packard Lofts downtown, so you can still see it there. He also founded the radio station KFI, as well as helped bring the Dodgers to Los Angeles. He also created a special symbol for his gas station that looks so good, the Standard Oil Company bought it and used it as the logo for their Chevron stations.
Wow.
He designed the Chevron logo.
Wow. I love this guy who dropped
the first electric car.
The guy who crashed into the first pothole.
How did the pothole get there? I get potholes. Wait, which came first? Cars or potholes?
The age-old question.
The pothole must have been caused by the other car. But this entrepreneurial young dork wasn't the only one to hop on the rumble seat of this new technology that was emerging. When cars became affordable thanks to the infallibly tolerant Henry Ford, they really started taking off. In 1905, there were 77,000 cars in the U.S., but by 1915, thanks to Ford, thank you, Henry Ford, there were 2.3 million cars in the United States. A lot of this had to do with the price. In 1910, a Model T cost $950, but by 1925, it was down to $290, which sounds like, is that how business worked back then? Like, I guess it still kind of works. Like a 4K TV is like 30 cents now or whatever.
Yep.
But like, I feel like cars are just getting more expensive and they're easier to build now.
Yeah, it's kind of stupid, but yeah. I'm going to go over this a lot again. So
yeah. You know, if you didn't catch it this time.
Yeah.
Greg will say it slower. Yeah. Well, Greg will say it faster.
I'll give you stats that I read at 3 a.m.
So every big city in the U.S. was changed by the emergence of cars, but yes. L.A. was particularly vulnerable to the change for a few reasons.
Because we needed it so bad.
Well, one was that by 1915, around this time that cars really started taking off, all the main roads in L.A. got paved, so things other than clumpy horses could easily travel on them. And the potholes.
And the potholes.
The heavy horses caused all the potholes. Another was that cars at the time were open air, which was great for the year-round L.A. warmth and sunshine. Mm-hmm. But another significant factor was that when World War Part One started in 1914, the world went into a recession and L.A. was part of the world. So with the price of cars going down and down, the fares of street cars weren't going lower. So suddenly having your own car in LA started getting more and more of an affordable financial option, as crazy as that sounds. So not to mention that they were faster, more reliable, and more comfortable than the streetcars that were becoming more and more tangled in traffic and delays as the city got denser and denser. One thing that emerged from this mess was something called the jitney. You ever heard of a jitney?
No.
With the railways refusing to adapt to the financial crisis and so many men out of work, people started basically Ubering. Like they started offering Uber services with their own personal cars to drive people around for money.
Wow.
The first one ever was March 1st, 1914 in Long Beach. They were called jitneys because the ride typically cost a nickel, and nickels were sometimes called jitneys back then in reference to jetons, which were old ass coins used in old ass Europe centuries ago.
Are you Grandpa Simpson now?
It used to be called a jitney. A jitney's named after a fella.
Back in my day, a car used to cost a jitney. What's a jitney? Well, a jitney was a flim flam.
Well, what's a jitney with you? It used to cost an up dog.
I was thinking the same thing. Well, what's an up dog? These coins were from like the 1600s. So why that was still slang in the 1910s, I don't know. So these were a cheaper and more convenient alternative to streetcars and also taxis, which did exist at the time. Now, taxis, strange.
Yeah.
Back in my day, they were called bluebies. So they were more of a precursor to a bus than a taxi because the jitney would pick up several people along the way. It was a proto Uber pool. Okay. People also preferred them because you were allowed to smoke in them as opposed to a lot of the enclosed trolley cars. But by 1915, there were 700 jitneys around LA carrying around 150,000 people a day. And the idea even spread out to other cities. There were songs written about jitneys. There is even a Charlie Chaplin short called A Jitney Elopement, but it was really like Ubers. Like the men were driving them. They would work weird hours. They were totally unregulated, like Uber.
Sometimes you shoot them, sometimes they shoot you.
They didn't have licenses, Uber. which became an issue for the railway companies. That and because it was costing them a lot of business because people were using this instead of them. So these companies started using their power, the railway companies,
You didn't, but I'm waiting for it because I think when we talked about the railways before, we said it constantly and then we would stop and laugh every time, which is so unprofessional.
Well, when it happens, I shall laugh, okay? But until then...
To a time-honored tradition of laughing when you mispronounce something.
So these railway companies started using their power to petition the city to regulate the jitneys by making them carry insurance and make them stick to regular routes and timetables. I think the ones that the railways already covered.
Okay.
They were like, you can't just go anywhere. You got to go where we go.
Oh.
And they also were no longer allowed downtown because of their petitioning. So that was the end of jitneys.
Wow.
By 1918, just 4 years, the homegrown phenomenon that had started 4 years earlier were pretty much non-existent in LA because the streetcars. As everyone talks about, the cars killed the railways. Think of the jitneys.
What about the jitneys? They didn't stand a chance.
They didn't stand a
We're going to do a rickshaw. It's so funny to like get in a jitney and be like, I got to go downtown. Ooh, best I could do is uptown.
I could take you to the limits of downtown, which is like Santa Monica. But while the streetcars could kill the jitneys, they could not stop the sensation that was the personal automobile. Mm-hmm.
Awuga.
What's that in the distance, I hear? A battle cry from the distance. The invading barbarians.
The British are coming.
And by 1920, LA had the highest per capita car ownership in the United States by 1920.
Wow.
So going on, what, over 100 years now?
Yeah.
As crazy as it sounds 100 years later to us now, cars in 1920 were seen as the solution to the woes of Los Angeles. Looking forward a little, in 1920, LA County had 161,846 cars and 170 gas stations. By 1930, 10 years later, there were 806,264 cars and over 1,500 gas stations.
Wow.
And businesses cropped up around these statistics. A lot of bicycle repair shops shifted to becoming car repair shops as bikes faded and the dawn of car, kingdom of the cars of the apes rose. But LA also became an epicenter of not just driving cars, but also making cars. Mm-hmm. The first car making company in LA was the Auto Vehicle Company in 1902. They were the first one in all of California. They were located at 943 North Main Street and founded by William H. Burnham, Carol S. Hartman, and Willis D. Longyear.
Longyear.
Eventually, they moved to what is now Olympic and Main. Their big car was called the Tourist. Ford Tourist. They came in bold colors and striping to reflect a very SoCal look and came with the very SoCal price of $1,700. Still, they became the most popular car in California. They opened up dealerships around all of California and also Arizona, Utah, Oregon, Oklahoma, Canada, and Mexico. They would also drive one of the tourists around town with a baby elephant in the backseat with a sign on that said, "Stronger than an elephant." That's the only way you could drive in the elephant lane on the emerging Main Street. In 1907, they branched out into making trucks, ambulances, delivery vans, and the first gas-powered fire engine on the West Coast.
Oh, cool.
In 1909, they were sold to the California Automobile Company and started making electric cars, but they only lasted until 1910 after having managed to make and sell about 3,000 cars. The Natural History Museum has a tourist, and it's really nice looking.
Oh, wow.
I can't tell if it is a modern paint job on it, because it looks like pristine. Nice.
Yeah.
Like, it looks nice, Greg. It looks nice. I'm doing hand gestures. Yeah. I'm doing suck it motions on my crotch. Nice.
Nice.
But it's really like, it looks like something, Jay Leno would do. Like, it looks like something you'd see at Bob's Big Boy on a Friday night. Jay Leno.
Jay Leno. An aged Jay Leno.
A puffed up Jay Leno. Another local LA car was the Franklin, made by Ralph Hamlin Inc. on Flower Street, started in 1905. By 1926, he had dealerships also in Glendale, Hollywood, and San Diego. But aside from just making cars, there were also things like Motor West magazine that started in LA in 1906 to appeal to the newly emerging Jay Lenos of the world. There were also the car dealerships selling cars.
Okay.
By 1910, there were around 70 car dealerships in LA that were selling an unfathomable 105 different car brands you could choose from, opposed to like the three that we have. Like, I don't understand why car brands went the opposite way of TV channels. Like, TV channels started with three, there's now like 4,000.
Yeah.
And cars used to have like 1,000, there used to be like 1,000 different types of cars, and now there's four, and they're all owned by each other.
They're actually all owned by Shell. Yeah, it is pretty strange, and I don't really know how that worked. I guess it's pretty hard to make a car.
From what I understand, it isn't. From all the people who don't work at car factories anymore, it seems pretty easy to make a car.
To make one.
So I don't understand I think there's like six car companies, aren't there?
Something like that. Yeah. Plus all the weird international ones like Ducati and...
and Toyota.
Yeah, Toyota.
So LA car dealerships also started selling new cars on credit.
Okay.
And also slightly used cars, and were seemingly the first in the country to have done either of those things. So buying cars, not cash up front, and buying a used car appears to have started in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and that's going to factor into my story or my segment a lot.
We could skip that.
No, we don't need to hear that.
I don't need to hear that.
I wish you could have told me 2 days ago that I skip it, but that's fine.
I told you to skip something.
I did lunch.
I told you to skip leg day. Yeah. So jumping forward a little bit, car washes. This is to appeal to the Carl Tarts in the audience.
Hi, Carl.
Car washes started popping up as these nasty little cars started getting dirty. I could not for the life of me find the definitive location for the first car wash in LA, but some say that the El Patio Auto Laundry and Gas Station at 260 South Vermont Avenue was the first in LA.
Okay.
This is what people claim.
Yeah.
Couldn't confirm that. Car washes were not invented here, but the automatic car wash was in 1940 in Hollywood. Again, could not find the exact location. So I say automatic, it was still 1940. So it was still people manually cleaning your car. But what was automatic was that it was put on a hitch and pulled through a tunnel humans were hand washing at assembly line style. One guy did pretend to be the flaps that smack all over
your
windshield.
That's great. Though. Yeah. He put a foam all over his body and rolled around in circles. Automatic, because if they don't do their job, we'll automatically kill them.
They will automatically lose their job. By 1951, car washes did become fully automated in the definition we know that as. And since that was around the time, this is the answer to Carl Tart's questions, that was the time around the time that the Googie style was taking over LA.
Right. Googie has so much to do with car culture.
Car culture and like drawing you in, like being crazy to pull over. So these new car washes of the future started popping up around LA, built in the futuristic new style of Googie to grab your attention, like the big rods you see sticking out of these places, which were Googie representations of water shooting up out of a fountain.
Cool.
So that's why they look like that.
Yeah.
Carl.
Carl.
Oh, I see. So he's working for Big Car now. He's a Model L of a car. So one claim we do have is that the first modern self-service gas station ever opened in 1947 at Gilson and Atlantic in Commerce by Frank Urich.
Okay.
So the first selfish service car wash, it was in Commerce.
Wow. How selfless.
His slogan was save 5 cents, serve yourself. Why pay more?
Oh.
But now, to step back a little bit, we heard about all the small local shops trying to peddle their automated horse and buggies around town, but it didn't take long for the big boys in the car game to see the cheap prices and wide open spaces of early 20th century LA and say, I want to pollute that.
Yeah, I want to damage them irreparably.
How can I destroy this?
Yeah.
In 1911, Ford opened up their Los Angeles assembly plant at 12th and Olive, which would move the next year to East 7th and Santa Fe. This was either the first or second Ford plant to open west of the Mississippi.
Wow.
It employed 1,100 people and was able to make 300 Model Ts in a day.
Jesus.
The building is still actually there and is now on the National Register of Historic Places. Then came, oh my God, Phantom! He just rolled off of the table
and landed on his feet. What happened?
That's one life, okay? You've used up a lot lately, so that's one life for you. So then came Willie's Overland in 1929 at 6201 Randolph in Maywood, which was where they made Jeeps.
Okay.
So that's why Jeeps have Willie's on the side, because it's Willie's Overland.
Oh, Overland. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of, I hate Jeeps. And the fact that they say Willie's makes me even angrier.
You're not cool.
you're not cool like a Jeep person like
Jeep
me.
A Jeep guy, yeah.
So then Ford opened another plant in Long Beach in 1930 at what I assume is only now called 700 North Henry Ford Avenue.
Oh, yeah.
Which is serendipitous, which didn't make Model Ts, but rather Model As.
Okay.
Which is what the Fonz drove. Then in 1932 came Chrysler at 5800 Southeastern Avenue in Commerce, where they were making Dodge and Plymouths and had railroad tracks that went straight into the building so that they could ship things out to the port, or maybe not the port, but like around the country easily. Then in 1936 came General Motors at 2720 Tweedy Boulevard in Southgate, where they made Chevy, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, and Cadillacs. The last major player came in the form of Studebaker in 1938 at 4530 Loma Vista in Vernon, where they made Studebakers. So all the major car companies of the time had factories pumping out their various death traps all over the more sparsely populated and poorer parts of LA.
Yeah, the industrial parts.
And then World War Part II hit and Studebakers had to be melted down into Nazi killers. All these car factories during the war shifted focus to military production for the duration of the fighting, not unlike the brave beer factories during COVID churning out hand sanitizer. So that's where I'm going to break mine for now. And now let's talk about how the culture that built around these cars that started emerging.
We got to backtrack just a little bit.
To 1985?
Damn it. So we're going to talk about cool cars, custom cars, and low riders.
Cooler than a Studebaker?
Greg, it's a Studebaker. It's got a round top.
Greg, it's a Willys Jeep.
Lowrider culture is too broad and amorphous a subject to go into definitively in one of these segments and requires a knowledge of automobiles that I, the son of an auto mechanic, simply does not have.
Son of an auto mechanic. It is crazy that you and I probably know less about cars than anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't even know how to put mine in reverse.
I just buy a new car every time I need to turn around.
Every time I need to parallel park.
Yeah. I know very little. It's my dad's a car guy. He'll open the hood to show me the engine. And it's like a, to me, it's like a Rube Goldberg machine. Right. It's just like nonsense. He's like, well, it's obviously like a, and it's the pump or it's the belt or it's the timing belt. What? Why isn't he a belt?
It's the belt, which is what I'm going to give you for not understanding this. But I mean, that this is changing as like cars basically just become like iPhones on wheels.
Sure.
But the knowledge of all the things I wish could just be like downloaded into my brain. Mm-hmm. I wish I just knew how to fix a car.
Yeah.
Like what could be more, how much money have we spent on trying to fix cars? And if we could have just done all that on our own.
I'm willing to learn how to do anything that like, there's a part of fixing a car where you have to like get a lift to pull the engine out. Anything that requires that, I'm probably not going to be able to do.
No.
But up to that point, I would like to learn how to do. The thing is, it's never been explained in a way that makes sense to me. Like my dad is not a good teacher.
Don't say that.
Come on.
Think of his PhD.
And all the car guys I've known in my life talk to you like you already know the thing, which is like what sports guys do too.
Right.
And like us movie guys.
Oh, it's a gravel grinder. Us movie guys. Can you put this in relation to American Graffiti for me? But the last thing I tried to do with my car was when the splash shield came untucked and it wouldn't. So I tried zip tying it all together. And I thought, I got it fixed. And then I drove through a puddle and it all came undone. And then I went to get an oil change and they're like, there's zip ties all under the bottom of your car. And I'm like, I don't know who did that.
Yeah, I don't know. I ran through the zip tie factory. I
drove through a zip tie factory. I was being chased by police and they thought it was a spike trip.
But it was zip ties. It was zip ties and some keys.
And some gum.
The bags make the same sound.
There seems to be a bunch of Hubba Bubba down here. I don't know, as I'm chewing Hubba Bubba.
Oh, I don't know, baby. I ran over Elvis Presley. cars are nonsense to me. I have changed brake pads before. I know how to change a tire.
I would never try that.
I had my dad standing over me, but he also can't see. So he's like, what are you looking at? I'm like, it's a big ball. I don't know.
Boba Fett. Oh, Hubba Bubba
Hubba
Fett.
Bubba. Yeah, I've changed lights before. Like there are little things.
I've changed a light.
Yeah.
I've changed my in-cabin air filter.
Sure, yeah.
And that's it.
I put everything a fuse else, in.
I
could put oil in.
I could dump some oil in.
I
can put water in the washer fluid.
Look at that. You're learning.
Look at me. I can check my oil. Don't know what I'm looking at.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It tastes bad.
It's dry as hell, but there's supposed to be oil in there.
So if you're not familiar with what I mean with a lowrider, think Ramon from Pixar's movie Cars.
I've never seen Cars.
Oh, okay.
Have you seen Cars?
Yeah, I've seen Cars. I was dragged to Cars.
Have you seen Riding in Cars with Boys? Is that part of the car universe?
Riding Cars with Toy Stories.
Riding Cars with Toys.
Lowriders tend to...
If that isn't something that should be at California Adventure, I don't know what is.
Yeah. Lowriders tend to mean customized classic cars with spectacular candy or flaked paint jobs, lower to the point of scraping against the pavement, sometimes Frankenstein by a hydraulic system that gives the car a little pep in the step, a little bounce in the house. But growing up...
A little junk in the trunk.
But growing up, for me, lowriders and classic cars and custom cars and hot rods and movie cars all fell under the umbrella of cool cars.
Right. It is.
Yeah, you'd see at a car show at a park or a cruise night or a Pomona swap meet or the Paso Robles car show or Bob's Big Boy on Friday nights.
Right. Or Jay Leno's Garage.
Or Jay Leno's Garage. It. Yeah, when I thought it was actually Conan.
Conan's on after.
Yeah.
Conan's
got the car.
Conan's outhouse is after Jay Leno's Garage. Yeah, car. As much as I proclaim I do not care about cars, I love a car or like any fair or something. Or a parade when they have lowriders. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love seeing all these cars.
As a kid, like it was funny because my dad, my brother, a lot of my uncles are all car guys. They would, you know, take us all to car shows. And I'd be like, I don't care. I don't know what I'm looking at. I don't know why it's going gaga. And then I would see 60s Batmobile there. And I'd be like, oh my God, the 60s Batmobile is right in front of me. And which is a beautiful car.
But you also, like with the lowrider stuff, you don't have to know any. Like it just,
you don't. It just looks good.
It looks objectively cool.
It looks, you're right. Objectively cool. And you see so many elements amongst, like, you can see five cars. They all have similar things, but each one does something differently. And there's different, they pronounce themselves differently. It's really cool. Los Angeles, I'm going to go over some information you talked about already, but Los Angeles is a perfect candidate for the birthplace of the lowrider and the concept of the cool car, because we are the car capital of the world, for better or worse. Mm-hmm. And I've said many times before, but the 1920s.
Come on, think of Jakarta.
Come on. The 1920s is when Los Angeles became a major modern city. And to accommodate the growing number of residents in a city that has already incredibly spread out by the point, Angelenos of the 20s needed cars to get around. And you were saying Henry Ford started selling his Model Ts here in Southern California as early as 1908. And over the next 20 years, he sold, like you said, 17 million Model Ts worldwide with no plans on stopping. Here in the city, in the 20s, the numbers of cars...
Unless the Jews had something to say about it.
My buddy Charles Lindbergh might have a couple of crazy ideas. Here in the city during the 20s, the number of cars quadrupled between 1914 and 1922. We had a rate of one car for every 2.25 people compared to the rest of the country, which was one for every 7.
Could you, like, I'm sure the traffic was bad, but like by our standards, not that bad. But imagine like going from like, you know, 70,000 cars here to 5 years later, there's like 800,000. Like, imagine the frustration of like, it used to take me 4 minutes to get here.
Just trying to cross the street, like crossing the street safely rose in danger significantly over a 5 year period. Yeah,
you better cross by 3 p.m. or else it's going to be 80% more deadly.
When the sun comes down, you are, it's legal to run you over.
They might think you're a horse, and that's not good.
Because they're going to send you to the glue factory. When I say the 20s is when we became a real city, part of that is because it was a decade where the car took over public transportation as the common man's way of getting around. By the 1920s, there was plenty of used up Model A's and Model T's sitting around that the average guy was able to afford one.
Right.
But they were being modified.
Which were already becoming affordable and affordable by
like
the
you
day.
Were, yeah, like you were saying. But they were being modified for speed, dropping excess car parts to drop in weight and adding engines with more power to boost the speed. And thus, hot rodding was born in...
What, say the year? Were you about to say the year?
No, I don't know the exact year.
But you're talking
year.
About like the 20s.
It is the 20s. I want to say it's the mid to late 20s is when hot rodding drops. It's, and I don't know... I guess because they were learning more and more. With every year, they were learning more about cars and how to modify them. So they're like, yeah, it goes 20 miles per hour. Well, what if we put a bigger engine? Okay, well, it's going to be slow because it's heavy. Okay, well, we drop the weight then. We drop the back seat. We drop the
get rid
bumpers.
Of the airbags, which exist.
Get rid of the windshield. We don't need it. But I just won't swallow bugs.
I'll keep my mouth closed. Yeah. I'll put on those silly goggles.
Yeah.
But it's crazy that like within like 10 years of them being around, like how can we make this more deadly?
Yeah. 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 I hit someone with my car and they survived.
How can I change that?
Yeah. So in the 20s, hot rodding was in its infancy, but over the next two decades, it would really flourish and become everything that we know hot rodding to be. When the street
Lightning race, McQueen.
Yeah. So when street races became illegal because all the property damage and deaths, they were moved to abandoned airfields and drag racing was born in the early 50s. But that's looking too far ahead. The Depression slows down the whole country, which included hot rodders, but it doesn't stop completely.
Well, you get rid of the economy. Then you can go faster.
Yeah. Drop the economy. Add more war.
Yeah. Increase military spending.
Racers would hit dry, barren lake beds northeast of LA. World War II and Rosie the River pick everything back up, standing on the tall shoulders of countless deaths. So when the boys come back home and production on cars picked back up, things had changed.
Which I'll talk about.
Which I'll talk about. First off, there was a demand for new cars. And with that, suddenly there was an influx of used cars being sold. Soldiers coming back from the war had the GI Bill to help support them, but working class people still struggled to find work once they were back home. So these new cars were perfect for them, you know, because they had money coming in that they were making from the GI Bill.
What can I waste this on?
Yeah, exactly. I need a car. What can I waste this on? Oh, well, I have some money coming in and all these used cars are for sale. This was true for the Latinos and black people of LA who were buying older models of cars. And now some even had a skill set in repairing and modifying machinery thanks to their time in the military and had a penchant for either be speed demons as a way to cope with PTSD like the Hells Angels or to showcase a flair for creativity after years of uniformity in the military. And thus the seeds of the lowrider scene were being planted. When it comes to talking about lowriders and Latinos,
I don't have to say yes, sir, anymore.
I'm going to paint my car green.
I'm going to put Tweety Bird on this car.
And nobody can stop me.
Not even Hitler. Yeah.
When it comes to talking about lowriders and Latino culture, it sounds very similar to what we had to say about pachucos and zoot suit style. Like young Latinos and black people wanted to put their own flair and personal creativity on popular American items, separating them from not only mass-produced products, but also white American crowd.
The Studebakers
of the world. Yeah. Like white people would want to participate.
I'm going to say like a joke from the 80s.
White people... When they put on a coat, they wear it like this. Like they want the same things that white Americans did, but they want to put a little spin on everything because we want to make sure everyone knows we're not white and we don't like white people.
I know you treat me like a white person, you know, completely the same and equal, but I'm different.
Yeah, I'm here to tell you that I'm different. I know you couldn't tell.
I know you're not thinking it whenever you look at me.
I know you're following me around this store for different reasons. In return, people of color managed to resist and still participate in American youth culture. And just like zoot suits would take on cultural and political identity, so would lowriders as it became symbols for not only Mexican-American youth, but a shorthand for Los Angeles. If you see a lowrider, you kind of think Los Angeles. You see palm trees.
Yeah, you do. You do. I do see one right now. But so you mentioned black people. What are those? You mentioned that because, you know, it was like Latino and Black.
Yeah.
So Black people were doing lowriders too, because you don't really see that.
You don't really see that. I think it was predominantly Latinos, but Black people were also very into lowriders.
Because when you go... I guess when we were famously driving through a lowrider parade in my Honda Civic, and every time I see lowrider things, it's more Latinos.
It's predominantly, I want to say, but there's also like, it's strange because I don't like to generalize.
Oh, I do.
But like there almost is like a dividing line in between like the classic car guy, which is like usually an older white dude,
Jay Leno,
and like guys who are into lowriders, but
George Lopez.
To me, it's sort of equal parts, because like in the 90s, I'll get to it a little bit, but like in the 90s, you see more lowriders in rap and hip hop videos.
Oh yeah, you're right.
So like it's part of like LA culture, and it's part of the cool LA culture.
I guess you're right.
No, they're there too, and they've sort of always been there, or at least from like the 50s, 60s on.
Okay,
were part of the culture.
But yeah,
too.
I guess you're right. Like maybe, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I know I'm right. Now, all this to say, after the war, things changed, as did car culture. Now everybody had a car. It was part of everyone's daily routine. Thus, speed was no longer what young car guys were after, because you're driving to work, you're driving to the market or the ball game, or you have a dumb family and everyone's on the road with you. Racing and speed were saved for the hobbyists and the nut job speed demons. What was now
or the 134.
No one's around. No one's even checking up.
If I hit something, I'll just fly onto this sign.
Now what was in was creativity. How can you spruce up your ride so it stands out?
Okay.
While most hot rods during the Depression were Fords because of availability and adaptability, most lowriders were Chevys, which were in surplus, and they were easy to modify.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Side note. For some reason, I don't know why. I meant to look it up, but I'm sure a lot of people know why. The Chevy Impala was an institution in the lowrider community. I think it was, I don't really know why. Like all Chevys
sounds
were
cool.
It does sound cool. I don't know if it was just easier to modify or if it just looked cooler. Because I think all Chevys were sort of easy to play around with. Okay, so lowriders in general, they would lower the rear of the car's frame to get it low to the ground and pack the trunk full of sandbags to ensure it would stay low.
That's fun. So there is junk in the trunk.
There's junk in the trunk. Eventually, that was changed with a more mechanical solution. They cut the springs and they gave the car wheels. They gave the car wheels that were smaller in diameter and had a lower profile, so you didn't see much of them.
See, this is what we were taught. Like, I would never... Well, I'm going to cut this spring on the... Yeah. Like, I would never, ever want to know how to mess around with that, because I would die immediately.
I think the early 2000s had a lot of car modification shows and motorcycle shows where they would just change a pimp on my ride. But it is fascinating to see how people look at a car and they think, we can change that.
Yeah.
And I never look at a car and think, how can I change? Like, I want a smaller screen so it looks slower. I don't think that, but these guys are welders. They know how to fabricate objects from fiberglass.
It's like, I mean, we just don't care. Yeah. Like it's like people who are like, I'll listen to the four songs that are on the radio. I'm not gonna say that we know music that well. Let's see.
I'll
lump you in with this.
I know two songs.
I need something to eat. I'll go to Chili's. Like that's you. Like that's the equivalent of us with cars. Yeah. Like, I need a car. I'll get a Corolla.
Well, I mean, like, I never had the money to get a car I've wanted. So like that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I want.
Greg, you can't afford a Studebaker.
Greg, come on.
This is sad.
But also like I don't look at a car as something I could inform. I was watching the Rad Fink documentary about Big Daddy Roth, and he has a little segment of like, you take a classic car and then like, well, I want a different windshield. I want the taillights to stick out like this. I want the bumper to I just don't look at a car and think, how can I play with around and make it look the way I want it to look?
It doesn't even occur to me. Like, I could change the color.
Yeah. Because I'm not creative at all.
I get cars that are just gray. I just get a gray car.
Something that's low profile so I could stalk people and they wouldn't know.
Yeah, something that when you're looking out your living room window at 4 a.m, you won't even notice it.
Talking about, again, to how they would modify cars. You know, they get a wheel that was smaller in diameter. They had a lower profile. The ideal choice I read was a 20-inch. I don't know how to even read tire measurements. Preferably with a white ring on the tire known as a white wall. If you've seen old cars that have white circular thing.
Biff's car.
Yeah, Biff's car. And covered with a baby moon hubcap that I always thought was called a chrome dome. It's not called a baby moon hubcap. People with low riders would get inventive trying to lower their ride to the ground. They'd cover the rear wheels with fender skirts. Sometimes they remove the post in between backseat and front seat windows so they could lower the roof and create a low, menacing, sleek look. You see that a lot of Mercuries. They would spray them wild colors, sometimes bright with metal flakes that would sparkle in the sun. Hmm. Or they'd give it a candy coat that makes the color pop and shine. Sometimes it'd be dark matte color that would give it like a brooding look. They'd play around with the bumper and fender style, swapping out car parts like taillights, headlights, rims. Every part of the car was replaceable, fixable, adjustable. The entirety of a lowrider and custom cars is about deconstruction. Ed Roth was great at this. Like I was saying, sometimes the car he would build wouldn't even function as a car. It was an art piece that had all the elements of a car modified and fabricated with love and creativity behind it, but it couldn't move an inch. It had to be towed into place.
The spruce goose.
The spruce goose of cars, yeah. Lowriders are really starting to become popular in Southern California in the late 40s, early 50s. Popular with the youth and most popular with Latino and Black youths. So obviously there was decided there had to be laws against this. Around the times when hot rodders were banished to abandoned airfields to race and low riding was starting to get attacked. By the mid to late 50s, a law was passed prohibiting any part of the vehicle to sit below the lowest part of the wheel rim, thus banning lowered cars.
What's the objection exactly to lowriders?
I don't know other than are you damaging the street, maybe is the only thing I could see them. But I think
but they're not.
It's not really. Yeah.
I mean, maybe it scrapes a little bit, but like it's not
forming potholes.
Yeah, it's not like driving with chains, like snow chains. Yeah. Like it's.
I think it's just like they're having too much fun doing this thing that's annoying us. So let's pass a law. Oh, no. How will the lowrider subculture survive this? Well, thanks to a Long Beach custom car guy named Ron, I think it's Aguirre, lowriding was able to persist when he created the first hydraulic suspension for his car as an X-Sonic bubble top Corvette. Using mnemonic pumps, valves, and airbags hidden in the frame, the hydraulics could drop a car low and then pop it back up above the wheel rim when the cops pass by.
So you can hide how low it gets. This is just a regular Chevy Impala. Yeah,
no big deal. We were, before we started recording, did the sad piano version for the trailer of
the George Lopez story. Bum, 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 bum.
So this was 1957, and it was followed shortly after by a 1959 Chevy Impala, the first Impala lowrider known as Buddha Buggy, a car restyled by Bill Hines for its owner, Tatsuko Tonda. I don't really know much about it.
I don't know what you just said.
I was reading about car guys and tried to like follow it up, but they're really like, it was just mostly forums talking about people.
Jay Leno.
There were a lot of car guys who were getting famous in the world of custom cars, like Ron Aguirre, like Bill Gines, but also guys like Al Sullivan, who had a shop in Orange County, which we're going to talk about. Carl Watson and Terry Anderson learned from him. Also coming around was the famous George Barris, who had a shop in the Valley at,
I forget what street.
It was on the same street as Bob's Big Boy, I think, which is what, Riverside?
Is that Riverside? No, is it Riverside or is that Burbank?
I don't know. It's one of those two.
I think it's Riverside.
He used to have a shop. It closed. But George Barris designed car. He was one of my favorite designers of cars, but he designed the 60s Batmobile. Mm. He designed Dracula and the Monster Coach from the Munsters and the Flintstones car for the movie, among many other actual cars.
Well, the work was all done for him.
He just had to build it.
The science was there.
He's a great car designer. Maybe it's just like a sleek look. Like Big Daddy Roth is very cartoony, like the car that Homer designs with a lot of bubble tops. But George Barris is an actual like, wow, that's a sleek, looks like a rocket.
Okay.
Or it looks like the 60s Batmobile.
Or it looks like a Munster mobile.
Yeah, it looks like the Munster mobile.
Looks like a Munster would drive this.
Just a few well-known characters, but honestly, there's thousands of local neighborhood innovators and stylists and cars. Every scene has like their folk heroes, basically. In the 60s is when you get the big split in custom cars. It seemed like I was saying, like white dudes got into
Jay Leno,
like flamboyant cartoony pop art, like Barris and Roth, and local scenes in the city kept to lowriders and classic cars as a tradition, trapping the lowrider scene kind of in amber, like hanging out for cruise nights on Whittier Boulevard, which is like sacred ground in lowrider lore, or Van Nuys Boulevard, or San Fernando Road in San Fernando, or Sepulveda. Like I said, Bob's Big Boy, the location in Whittier and in Burbank, had a long tradition of Friday cruise nights where classic cars and lowriders would descend to hang out and show off their cars. The whole scene thrives in the 60s and really hits its peak in everyone's memories, and it's sort of stuck there, even now, in my perspective anyways. Like if you go to a car show today or a cruise night, you're going to hear oldies from the 60s. Fashion styles tend to lean more towards 50s, 60s.
We've talked about this before, that the lowrider culture has the best taste in music.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. Best taste. Not even a question. Nope. Except maybe just behind the Accordion Society.
Yeah, the Polka Pels. Yeah. Yeah. A car show, you're going to hear the best oldies. Mm-hmm. And it's the same 20 songs, but right. I want to hear them so bad. I don't need them.
Like I said, we have four songs.
We have four songs, yeah. And they're all, you know, it's a very American Graffiti. Like, it's very much what American Graffiti is trying to capture is the, you know, here's 20 songs, you're here. It's a warm summer night. Right. Everyone you know is out. Everyone's looking good.
And especially me when I'm there. But the Bob's Big Boy night is so much fun.
Yeah.
And they open up a special side window just to buy milkshakes.
Yeah.
So that you don't even have to go inside. Like, you can just be out there in the parking lot with the cars and order a milkshake from this window.
Mal's Drive-In could never.
Mal's Drive-In should.
Mal's Drive-In should. They have a responsibility.
They have a responsibility. This is unethical for them to not do this.
And why don't they? And where's all the cars, Mal's Drive-In? We're trying to copy American Graffiti. It's up to Bob's Big Boy to do.
Yeah, you're supposed... You are American Graffiti.
Do better.
Bob wasn't there.
We believed in you. We believed. But as the decades move forward, the cars get less classic and more, in my opinion... kind of sleazy. In the 70s, vans with airbrushed murals dominated, and classic cars pushed the hydraulic jump to its limits, Buzzy popping dice. A massive Chevy in the air for looks. Fuzzy dice. Everything's got carpet in it. Lowrider culture started to seep into the mainstream in the 70s, too. The band War puts out the hit Lowrider.
Mm-hmm.
The film Boulevard Nights is released.
It's actually called the George Lopez theme.
Just for everybody who wants to Google it. The Marilyn Monroe of lowriders, Gypsy Rose, which is a 64 Chevy Impala owned by Jesse Valadez, was seen in the episode of NBC's Chico and the Man. Gypsy Rose is currently part of the collection of the Peterson Automotive Museum. Lowrider Magazine, which remains the scene's most source text, starts publishing thanks to three San Jose State students, Larry Gonzalez, Sony Madrid, and Danny Nunez. The Chicano rights movement, Whittier Boulevard, Lowrider Magazine, and the Lowrider scene all get fused together, and each part sort of takes on this larger-than-life involvement in Los Angeles, like Mexican-American, Latino culture. Like, wearing a zoot suit after the rights was seen as an act of resistance and pride, so does driving a lowrider at some point. It's sort of like, well, he's cool, and it's a political statement.
Yeah.
But in the But the 70s is also when gangs start to form, and car clubs get confused with gangs, and sometimes they are gangs, and sometimes they aren't, and it's all the same to LAPD. Some crew nights would turn, you know, it would turn violent because if rivals ran into each other, they would, you know, pop off. 1977, there was a ban on cruising that all but killed the Whittier Boulevard scene. 11 years later, 1988, another cruising ban would put into place through the state. Now that lowriders had moved out of Southern California through San Diego to San Francisco, out of state to Las Vegas, Phoenix, Portland, Dallas, Denver, Houston, Miami, and off continent. The lowrider custom car scene in Japan is one of the most strongest presences in all the subculture. That's weird.
That is very un-Japanese.
But you got to see it. It's so strong.
Like, every time the car pops up, it apologizes.
Lowrider culture has persisted through the 90s because of, like I said, rap and hip hop, because the people who like Ice Cube, Eazy-E, and Snoop Dogg all found value and status in their cars, the creative looks and innovations, and all in the sense of rebellion that came in being seen in lowrider. It meant something. It was a sleek old car that's been modified and fawned over. And it's not another like off the line Toyota Camry. It's a big, huge metal art piece that lets people know how cool I am.
Well, that's why when I strolled through the lowrider parade in Elysian Park in my Honda Civic Hybrid, it really turned a few heads.
It really changed the game.
Yeah.
They didn't know that you could do that. Yeah.
That's why you see so many people driving Honda Civic hybrids now.
They didn't know that you can accidentally drive into lowrider parade.
They didn't know that the street was not blocked. So from now on, they block it.
They block it.
It changed the game.
And nobody's going to Bodegon's anymore because Bodegon's not there. The scene is stronger than ever, obviously. So strong that this year, 2024, Gavin Newsom passed a law prohibiting cities and local governments from passing anti-cruising ordinances that would ban lowriders from driving on public streets. Let my people go.
And during Passover of all times.
Yeah, let my people go.
Let my lowride jump. Well, now we're going to take a step back a little bit more and talk more about the factories, the big factories.
Yeah, because I was curious and I could not touch the factories.
Do not touch these
factories.
You're not union. I'm union.
You're going to monopolize them, aren't you?
No, I'm union.
I'm union. I swear I wouldn't do that.
I'm union and I also work for the mafia. So I'm going to get more now into like what sort of unraveled. Because LA really was like not just car culture, but like cars are made here.
Yeah.
Which was our old slogan.
And our cars are made here too.
Car brakes work well in a place like this. Going back to World War, just after World War II, the war is over and Hitler is in Argentina. The production of cars kicked into a whole new gear, which I'm told is a car thing. GM opened up another plant in Van Nuys in 1947, which I'll get to a little bit later because it's in the valley.
Yeah.
That's going to be its whole own episode. They were making that this one in Van Nuys Corvairs, Novas, Camaros, Chevy full sizes, and Firebirds.
In the 1964 Chevy Nova is my dream car.
I don't even know what that looks like. Is that wheels?
It's got wheels, it's, buddy.
Oh, whoa.
It's got wheels driven by another wheel.
It's got four wheels, and behind the wheel is a wheel. So Ford opened up another plant in Commerce in 1948 at 5801 Southeastern Avenue that made Lincolns and Mercurys. Nash Motors, which I don't even know what that is, opened up in El Segundo in 1948. Kaiser Fraser, again, which I think it's part of the new
Fraser. He worked Frasers. With Hitler, right?
Kaiser Fraser.
Yeah, Kaiser Fraser.
It was Niles Goebbels. Yeah. So, his most trusted lieutenant, Eddie.
Eddie.
Hair Eddie.
Eddie, they call him the dog.
Not to be confused with Bulldog. So Kaiser Fraser opened near the Long Beach Airport in 1949, making Deluxe, Special, and Travelers, whatever those are.
Yeah.
Then a little later in 1958, Ford opened yet another plant at 8820 Washington Boulevard in Pico Rivera, making Mercury and Edsel. So there were a lot of even Ford. There were like three or four Ford plants.
Wow.
At the peak of car manufacturing in L.A., there were some 15,000 people across the city building cars, churning out 500,000 automobiles a year in Los Angeles. Supposedly during the 60s, we overtook Detroit in the number of cars built. Really? So, but as George Harrison keeps trying to tell us, all things must pass.
Talk about kidney stone.
All pain must linger all stones for a few must days. Pass. At a certain point in the 60s, car companies realized something crucial. Americans are expensive. It would save them so much money if they could move these car factories to other countries where nasty American concepts like unions and living wages weren't so important to people.
In other countries, they're just happy to work.
They thank us that we can put a little bit of food on their table.
And we mean a little bit. And we don't mean table. We mean ground. You can't afford Earth's the table.
Earth's table. So that's exactly what they started doing. The car factories of LA started being moved overseas or into non-union parts of the US like the South because they could make their cars for much cheaper but charge more.
Yeah.
On top of that, imported cars from non-American companies started making ground in the market here, which lowered the demand for U.S. car companies that were not as well regulated and not as fuel efficient during the oil crisis of the 70s compared to cars from Asia or Europe.
Okay.
So because of this, by 1971, 41% of all the cars in L.A. were imports, and that number just kept growing.
Yeah.
And that was the same year the first of the major car factories in L.A. closed, which was the Chrysler plant in Commerce, laying off 1,300 people, lost their jobs.
What year was that? Sorry.
1971.
Okay.
But some other ones had already closed by this point, but this was the first one seemingly to be related to the shift in car buying that was happening.
Yeah.
That's also a car term, I'm told. Shift? I don't know.
The same one you used before. Go ahead.
No, that was a gear. I said gear. Yeah. Those are not related, I think. The downtown Ford plant had closed in 1930. Kaiser Fraser closed in 1951, but it's coming back on Paramount Plus. Willys Overland closed in 1954. Nash closed in 1955. Ford Long Beach closed in 1959. Studebaker closed in 1956. Ford and Commerce closed in 1957, but the Chrysler one was a huge factory to close. The next big one came in February 1980 when the Ford in Pico Rivera closed, laying off 1,670 people. Then in April 1982, the GM plant in Southgate closed, laying off a whopping 2,550 people. And then suddenly, the only car manufacturer left in LA was the GM factory in Van Nuys.
Wow.
Which is kind of a minor case study of what was going on and what had happened at the bigger plant. So I'm going to go into that now. Like I said, this place had opened in 1947 at 8000 Van Nuys Boulevard in what you would now call Panorama City.
Panorama City.
It was 100 acres big. Wow. And like a lot of these plants were, it was a big factor in developing the surrounding neighborhood. This one in particular was influential in bringing people to that entire part of the valley. So these were union jobs that paid well and land around there was cheap at the time. Mm-hmm. So families started popping up and building houses and it became kind of like a little company town, like Van Nuys, Panorama City.
Wow.
The families knew each other and were bonded by employment at GM, which they were proud of working there. Like, yeah, like we are a GM family. If you ever buy a Ford car, you will be,
we will burn your house to the ground,
but it's okay, 'cause it's cheap. That's like a day's wage. You could buy a new, you could build a new house.
Just work it off.
We're gonna do overtime for like 30 minutes. You'll buy a new house. Workers would go to drink together at places in the area, like the Trophy Room or Shay Ho or Opie's, which I'm sure you would, any one of those you would pay to go to these days.
Oh, absolutely. And you would have to drag me out.
Opie would have to drag you by the scruff. Yeah.
He said something about Yamaha. But, he wants a dirt bike.
Are you speaking Japanese in a GM town? Are you speaking Japanese in Panorama City? By 1977, these were the people physically building all the Camaros and Firebirds in the country. We're coming out of animes. Wow.
Thunderbirds are beautiful.
Firebirds, not Thunderbirds.
Oh, what did you say?
Camaros and Firebirds.
I don't know.
Thunderbirds.
I don't know what a Firebird is.
Not a T-Bird, yeah. An F-Bird.
Yeah. F-Bird. I'm going to flip you the F-Bird.
I'm going to lay an F-Bird right now. But they were hit just as hard by the influx of imported cars, and the recession of the 80s just made that worse. Yeah. So the cost of living went way up and the layoffs started. The United Auto Workers Union decided to picket them for higher wages and also to protest the discrimination some of the Latin American and Black workers were facing in the factory. Mm-hmm. Cesar Chavez came to the first rally at the GM factory. Then GM started threatening to move the factory to Canada, which united all the workers there, including the white ones, the Jay Leno's, and got both Jesse Jackson and Maxine Waters involved, where they pressed upon GM the need for them to take responsibility for the community that popped up because of this factory and to not abandon them just to try to line their own pockets. Yeah. Like, this town will fail if you leave. This actually did convince them and won them a few more years. But in 1989, GM decided the factory was going to close for good. GM just, they couldn't afford to do business in Van Nuys anymore, they claimed. The Van Nuys plant was also in desperate need of modernization, which would have cost hundreds of millions of dollars at a time when in 1991, GM posted a loss of $4.5 billion. Dollars.
Yikes.
They lost that much money. The story came to an end on August 27th, 1992, when the Van Nuys factory closed and Camaro and Firebird production was moved to Quebec,
Canada.
Happy Halloween.
Tune into Candy's Dandy to hear what that's about.
Coming soon to Candy's Dandy, a French accent. This was the end of the last of the auto plants of Southern California, was the GM Van Nuys plant. They had made just that plant 6.3 million cars during their run. And by the time of closing, they were still doing 406 cars a day, which was about one per minute that they were open. 2,600 people lost their jobs from this plant closing. But an interesting thing happened on the last day. The last car to be made was a Chevy Camaro Z28, and a collector had already prearranged to buy that specific car and had also been offered to come watch it being built. So when he got there, the workers were not particularly happy, but as it was going down the assembly line being built, each worker started signing the part of the car that they were responsible for.
Wow.
And then the word got out of this, and all the workers who were not even involved with making that car came back the next day and signed the insides of this car. Wow. So there's over 2,000 signatures of all the people who worked at the GM plant on the insides of this car as like a memorial for all the people who actually liked their jobs and were proud of what they did at this place.
So sad.
It was also nice that the guy who bought it got the license plate for it. It was 4UAW645, meaning 4 United Auto Workers Local 645 in honor of all these people.
That's nice.
The factory was demolished in 1998 and replaced with The Plant, which is a big shopping center that I think has a Tutti Frutti.
I mean, I know this is all sad, but guys, what we gained?
There's a Tutti Frutti, right? I mean,
what we gained in the ashes?
2,600 workers, but they have a lot of toppings to choose from. They have like 2,600 toppings to choose from at Tutti Frutti.
That's a topping for each person laid off.
In honor.
Yeah, in honor of them.
So there are no longer any car manufacturers operating in Los Angeles. The closest is TABC Inc., TAB Inc., at 6375 Paramount in Long Beach, which opened in 1972. They were the first Toyota parts plant in the U.S., so they just make parts for Toyota. So that's kind of the closest we have.
Okay.
But what this all got me thinking about, other than, man, Jay Leno looks good in denim, is that if any of these factories had closed in some other smaller town where like that was the industry, it would have been the end of that town.
Sure.
Like, it would have turned whatever town that was into like a sad semi-ghost town where you get harvested for your fillings if you run out of gas there. Like, it would have destroyed anybody else. But LA has survived so many failing industries. In this episode alone, it survived two different industries, the failing of railways and the failing of cars.
Yeah.
But the amount of business that goes on here is so diversified that nothing can stop us.
No.
Cue the ending of Doctor Strangelove. But yeah, that's what, like, it's sad in a way. It's sad in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's sad.
But it's just like, how many, like, oil, rails, mm-hmm. cars, aerospace, kind of, like,
yeah.
even kind of movies, like, so many industries have failed here that sort of established LA, and yet it's still going.
Yeah, this will never be a ghost town, no matter how much we want it to be. How much we just like, oh, everyone go back home. We can't do this anymore.
But yeah, it's the legacy of cars. We're now just users of cars. Yeah. Like, we no longer create it.
Yeah.
We are just sort of living it.
Yeah, we're fans of cars. We're either fans of cars or it's just a utilitarian purpose. Like, I mean, I talk to plenty of people like, I hate having a car.
I love having a car and hate having it. I hate paying for a car.
Yeah.
I hate dealing with parking, but I need a car.
Yeah, the public transport system is just not.
I don't know how to ride a bike.
I don't think that our public transport system is so bad, although a woman was stabbed like 60 times.
But how badly was she stabbed?
But the way that the city's laid out, it just cannot accommodate us.
For specific people, it can be very good, but like, yeah. I will never make it to work on time if I have to take public transportation. Nope. I barely make it to work on time with a car.
On my own free will. Just thinking about, like, let's say you're here and you have to get to Westwood. There's no public transport that can do that easily. You'd have to go the way around the mountain as opposed to just jumping Beverly Glenn.
I'll jump Beverly Glenn whenever I want.
Whenever she's awake.
But the whatever they're building, supposedly, this light rail that's going to go from like Sylmar to Westwood. Like, I can't wait for that to happen.
Yeah.
And then I won't have to park by the graveyard and get scared every time I want to go to Westwood. But like, I can't wait for that sort of stuff to start coming more and more. But
yeah.
It'll still never be enough. Like, I will never be able to take public transportation to Granada Hills to visit my parents.
Yeah, no. As close as something might get you, it's like, it's still like a mile in between these two things.
A mile of, like, not even an interesting mile.
Yeah, no. Residential boring along the freeway mile. Not
even be sidewalks.
No, it's just not gonna, we're just too stretched out.
Yeah. Here in my car. Want me to sing the song again?
No, we're good.
So that's a little bit of car culture in LA. So before we have our listener question, we have our pre-listener question plug.
I want to go for a drive.
I drank all this and I want to drive now.
It's a Sprite. Relax. Sprite.
It's a spiked Sprite. It's Sprite naughty. So this month, we ask you to do one thing each month. I'm going to ask, how about some more Patreon supporters? Yeah. Why not? It helps us keep this show going, keep the lights on.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to patreon.com/LAMeekly, you can support us at the $1 a month level. It's just support, but you will get a sticker. But at the $5 level, we will hand write to you a postcard every single month in the most legible handwriting, mm-hmm. not written by serial killers.
Not written by the Zodiac Killer. It will not be cryptic. I swear.
And you'll get a sticker. So patreon.com/LAMeekly. You can support us financially to help keep this show afloat. We're thinking of getting hydraulics put on this show. I want to pinstripe a scene of like a sailor, but he's like half naked.
You can't pinstripe a scene, you dullard.
Why not? I want to. Why not?
It's just interpretive lines.
If we
lines,
have enough Patreon money,
we can
pinstripe a scene.
It'll just be like a Pollock thing, but do it anyways. Yeah. It's just like splatter.
I want someone to sneeze paint all over my car. And if we don't have enough Patreon supporters.
If you can't tell a story with accent lines.
Then who are you? So now it's time for our listener question. This one is from our friend Olivia.
Hi, Olivia.
She asks, I have wondered since long before moving here, whether people who were actually from here used the word Cali. I've been down some internet rabbit holes trying to find out, and the answers have been mixed, but seem to lead towards no. For what it's worth, I kind of hate it, but I'm kind of weird about language. As a transplant from a city that got ruined by transplants, I'm always concerned with trying to blend in and not be annoying. So where do y'all... She Whoa. Just gave herself away.
Yeah.
Where do y'all stand on this? As a side note, I've kind of wondered the same about SoCal, though that one doesn't bother me as much. I did use SoCal in this, but I kind of used that for dramatic effect.
Right. I use SoCal a lot.
Do you really?
Yeah. I like saying Southern California, but SoCal if I'm, you know, let's say I am anxious.
You're on a rush. You're rushing by. You're late to work.
Yeah.
But I've public transit.
I've never heard nor have I ever said Cali before.
I have never, ever. I don't even think as a joke.
I've heard it as a joke where people are pretending to be like from either like a Valley Girl surfer type or like an out of towner talking about.
Right.
The way you would say Hala is like a North California thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Hala Cali or whatever stupid crap. But I've never
Cali SoCal.
Yeah, but I've never heard it earnestly.
Yeah. I neither have I, like, even from, I feel like I've heard it from some people who think they're really cool and maybe live like in the outskirts of LA or like moved away from LA.
An Orange County thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe like I don't like slang. Like, slang is always going to make you sound stupid at a certain point.
Yeah.
So I will always say California. I will always say Southern California.
Yes.
Except when, for dramatic effect. But yeah, I don't think that I don't hear people saying that.
I like the F too much.
I love to F.
I love to F anytime I can.
I'm about to lay an F bird right now.
I love the sound of California.
California. Yeah.
It makes me feel like John Steinbeck.
It makes me feel young and free like John Steinbeck. I don't hear that. Yeah. I mean, like, do you hear people say that? I never heard people say that, but I don't hang out with cool people. Maybe cool people say this, but
we're definition of cool is weird. Yeah.
Yeah, true. If they're on TikTok, they're cool. Yeah. But like, I don't think that's a thing. I feel like it's, you know, like in shows or like advertising campaigns when they make up slang to like help sell the product. Like, I feel like that's a marketing gimmick that nobody actually says.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's exactly what you just said.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to California.
California.
California. That's how I sing the song.
I feel like TV's interpretation of surfers say Cali.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I don't know if I've ever heard. I mean, maybe I don't hang out with surfers and skaters, but
you don't. Have you been to Dogtown? No, I don't think it's a thing.
I don't think it's a thing either.
I say no. If you say it, you are a lizard person. You have exposed yourself.
Yeah, get out if you're a lizard person. Go back to a rock. To lay on a rock.
Oh, okay. That's
what I meant. Sorry. I realized after I said it that it sounded awful.
You bet. I ran all the way back to a rock. Is that what you were trying to say?
That's what lizards do.
That's what lizards do.
Yeah. They love to lay on a
lizard.
A rock.
I ran back to a rock.
A rock.
So Greg hates people from Iraq.
I love people from Iraq. Lizards. I love
Gila
them.
Monsters.
Yeah, Gila monsters.
So that was our May episode. Hey, everybody. I know Earth Day just happened or is about to happen, but get in your car and just burn some oil and rubber. What better time to hop in your car?
My God, Earth Day will always remind me of the show we were supposed to do that COVID took away from us.
Oh my God. Yeah, the Earth revolted. The Earth said no.
The Earth said no thanks.
You know what? I'm not just taking away Earth Day. I'm taking away all days.
All days. Yeah. Every day will be the same. Yeah.
So enjoy your car this Earth Day or previous Earth Day. And see you in a little bit. When we have put on some new carburetors.
Mm-hmm. Carburetors. Have a nice May, everybody. Go to the beach. May. Do something nice for yourself.
Get ready for summer because it is going to be miserable.
Miserable.
You're going to never
want
to leave your car.
No.
Because that's where your air conditioning works. So that's been yet another episode of LA Meekly. Bum, 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 bum. Since 2013.
Wow.
George Lopez's face pops up on a trampoline.
That you tie it to George Lopez so much infuriates
How
me.
Could it not? I mean, like,
the song was, I've heard that song for like decades. And
it's
you're like
peanut butter and jelly. You cannot extract the two.
Who the hell's George Lopez?
Who the hell's Jelly?